Being a local celebrity, he was probably ushered straight to my floor.
Who is it? Izzy demands.
It's him!
I squeak. All systems in my body clash simultaneously. Am I excited? Yes. Am I scared? Yes. Am I wearing my least sexy and inviting pair of PJs? Abso-fucking-lutely.
Is it really him? Or is it like the scene from Taken? Because I can totally call the cops. Cough twice if it's a kidnapper. Is it's him? So jealous. I'd cut a bitch for a steamy booty call right about now.
Do him, Blair. Do him for the both of us. I hear twins sometimes have a physical connection that allows them to feel the pain and pleasure of their siblings. Have a chain orgasm and teleport it to me, okay?
I stare down at my phone, half disgusted, half confused, and hang up on my sister.
Come on. It was a long time coming. I open the door in my PJs and wet hair. Ty stands there in tight black jeans and a matching leather jacket, looking like an advertisement for Bad Boys.
What are you doing here?
I aim for a grunt, but my voice is smiling, betraying me completely with its high-pitched volume. I sound like Izzy.
Taking you on that date.
He drops his dark-eyed gaze to my unintentional cleavage, entertained.
Digging your outfit, by the way.
I'm wearing a blue onesie with huge Cookie Monster eyeballs on top of my blue hoodie. That's it. I'm never going to live through this humiliation.
Why didn't you call first?
He shrugs as if to say, what for?
You know, to ask if I was available, I clarify.
I already told you, Barbie. I don't do question marks.
I crack a can of beer for him while I get dressed. I have no idea where we're going, nor do I care. He wants his 2 hours now, that's what he'll get. But I'll be milking my interview with him to 30 minutes, and he better give me great answers. The thought of Nicole sneaks into my mind again, but I shake my head and make it disappear, exchanging the blonde bombshell with a picture of my fragile grandmother, who is probably sinning out of wedlock on a regular basis while I'm stuck here, price-matching new pocket rockets on the internet. Considering Ty's casual wear, I opt for a grumpy cat muscle tee, black leggings, and my denim chucks. I have no time to fix my hair and makeup, so I quickly draw on thick black feline eyeliner and squeeze nude lip gloss onto my lips. When I walk out of the bathroom, ready for my date, Tyler isn't there. And I have no way to contact him, seeing as I don't have his number. I blink twice to make sure I'm not hallucinating. Maybe he finally realized he isn't going to get some and gave up. Or maybe my peculiar onesie broke his spirit? I walk across the living room and pick up the half-empty Bud Light. It is still cold and leaves a ring on the oak coffee table. I lean back into the sofa and glare at it, my only real proof of Ty ever visiting this place. The beer can and his scent, that hot guy smell that stuck in my nostrils days after I met him. I fall back onto the sofa with a sigh, determined not to let this affect me. I pick up my phone and text Shane, blocking all the questions running through my head. I decided I'm staging an intervention for you and Izzy. You'll work out whatever this is that happened between you two, and boy, this is going to be fun to watch. My mouth curls in amusement, knowing how ticked off Shane's going to be. Then I hear the doorbell chiming again. This time, I sure as hell expect someone. I open up without even checking who it is. I know, I probably would be the first victim if this was a B-grade horror movie. But it's not a guy with a chainsaw. It's Ty.
What is wrong with you? I seethe, visibly cross. I'm not sure what kind of game we're playing, but I know I'm on the losing end.
A ton of things, but I don't think we can cover it in 2 hours. Maybe a whole weekend? Anyway, I forgot something in my car. Here.
He thrusts a black velvet box with gold letters on top at me. He follows as I place it on my coffee table, right next to his beer, and eye it like it's a ticking bomb. This doesn't look like flowers. My tone is still hostile.
Pretty and smart.
His husky voice matches the devilish look that's on his face.
Seeing as he brought a gift, my pissed-off level shouldn't be plunging by the second. Gifts are not my thing. In fact, I hate to be on the receiving end. Izzy pays for my stuff, my parents pay for my stuff. Sometimes it feels like I'm being held hostage by my relatives' capability to offer me everything I can't get for myself. But with Tyler, I somehow feel like I don't owe him anything back. He doesn't know me, and I'm guessing by the nickname he's given me that he assumes I feel like I belong in this glitzy apartment. Wrong, Hottie. Very wrong. I reach for the box and open it hesitantly. I take out a pair of pink leather boxing gloves. Slick, new, and glossy.
I got you these babies when I was shooting the promotional video for the fight in San Francisco. Passed them by, did a U-turn, and walked right into the store. They made me think of you, because they're stupid pink, like Barbie.
But they hold a promise to something darker. Raw. Like you. A grin slips through my frown.
She's cracking. I can see a smile.
He takes hold of the gloves and insists I try them on. Once he's helped me push my hands inside, he kisses the thick material of one pink glove and pulls me to my feet, twirling me in my spot like I'm showing off one of Izzy's designer dresses. I'm caving in this moment. Hormones are on a break and brain is dead right now. But you know who is rocking it like a badass? Heart.
Listen up, he says. For this date, I want us to start over. Forget the parking lot, forget kickboxing class, and forget the shower. This is just a boy-meets-girl scenario. No prejudgment or reading into shit, all right?
I give him the eye-roll treatment, way too embarrassed to admit that I like his braveness and new no-bullshit policy.
I'm Ty Wilder. I'm 26, a Libra, if you're into that kind of crap. Favorite food is probably barbecue beef ribs. I'm a cage fighter. Fun fact, I had my tonsils removed when I was 12, and I've been losing small bits of other body parts pretty much ever since in the ring.
Your turn. I'm Blair Stern. I'm 23. I'm a Scorpio and not into that kind of crap. I've been a vegetarian since I was 8 for moral reasons. I'm a college student and part-time bartender. Fun fact, my older sister is supermodel Isabel Stern. And by older, I mean she's 4 minutes older because we're twins.
Ty's mouth twitches like he's fighting one of his boyish smiles. Hot damn, you mean I got myself a date with a supermodel?
With a sister of a supermodel, not really the same thing, I correct. But I prefer not to talk about it.
Talk about apples and oranges. Isn't she some kind of a style icon or something?
Was that a dig at me?
I like your style better, just for the record.
I remotely recall saying that I don't like talking about this just a few seconds ago. I squint my eyes at him, and he laughs.
A real belly laugh.
Fair enough. Let's go, Barbie.
Ty's Hummer lumbers up to the freeway towards Lafayette. I slouch down in my seat, praying no one I know will pass us and recognize me in the monstrous vehicle with flame-shooting skulls painted on both sides and a huge self-promotional bumper sticker that says, Mind the Zombie. His license plate reads, X-Zombie X. His profile is glorious, even more so with his slightly crooked nose, ruddy pout, and strong, devilish eyebrows. I'm getting lost in his face, like another one of his groupies, and I loathe it. Gotta stop staring. You do realize your ride looks ridiculous, right? Conversation that includes criticism. The kiss of death to a guy's libido. Let's try and see if I can kill Ty's.
You're one to talk, he smirks, still watching the road.
That's different. You actually have a choice. I pick up the iPod lying next to the gear shift, flipping through his playlist connected by Bluetooth to his stereo. Just like you have a choice not to listen to crappy music, but you still do. Oh my God, Eminem? Soulja Boy? Most Def? What are you, 11? We've left the freeway and he takes a sharp right turn, heading into a narrow labyrinth winding through the woods. He's laughing again, a sound I'm growing to like more and more.
Give me your phone, you little music snob.
Ty shifts into a lower gear, but doesn't stop driving, flipping through my playlist, his lower lip pulled into a pout.
Neck deep. Belle and Sebastian? I don't even know.
No, wait, found one I recognize. He swipes the touch screen, and Easy Lover by Phil Collins fills the air.
It's a classic.
I giggle and blush simultaneously. Ty is singing the lyrics loudly and bobs his head, pretending to be into it. It's ridiculously cute, so I duck my head, looking away, I feel like I've got enough ammo on you for a lifetime, he says. One day, when you're this hotshot journalist everyone knows about, I'll use this info against you. Just wait.
Oh, you charmer, I grin, staring at the wooded area we're driving through, not even slightly uncomfortable at the isolation surrounding us. I wonder if he truly believes I can become something big. The butterflies in my stomach are fluttering at full force.
I'll have you know, I can be charming when I want to be.
I thought bad boys don't do romance.
Me? A bad boy?
He pretends to look shocked, his mouth forming an O, while he stabs his chest with his finger, his gaze turning from the road and back to me.
That's just hateful. Besides, romance is my middle name.
What is your middle name, actually?
Raymond. Close enough, no?
Rad name, dude, I chuckle, as he pulls to a stop in the middle of nowhere.
I admit, it's not as cool as a 23-year-old listening to Phil Collins, but I can live with that.
Unbuckle yourself, Miss Cool. We've arrived. Ty holds my waist as I hop out of his Hummer, and then he turns on his iPhone's flashlight. The air is fresh and warm, and it's pitch black. I should be scared, but for whatever fucked-up reason, I trust him. He leads the way, his fingers brushing mine in a semi-handhold as we walk wordlessly. We arrive at a timbered wooden cabin, about the size of my living room, located far from civilization. Outside, there's a stack of chopped logs and an old beat-up truck. It looks like someone occasionally lives here, but rarely takes care of the place. He opens the door and walks in, and I follow. The cabin is full of scratched and lumpy furniture, but I also see a huge flat-screen TV with XWL's Fight Night dancing on the screen. A few lit candles flicker next to a big fluffy rug centered between a faded sofa and an ash-filled fireplace. Right next to the rug, there's an expensive bottle of 25-year-old scotch. The smell of old wood and fresh herbs waft through my nostrils.
What's your poison?
His eyes are roaming my body, despite my best efforts to look casual, and I quickly glance at my watch. 20 minutes have passed since we left my apartment. 1 hour and 40 to go. Take a guess, I settle on the rug. The bartender in me is curious as to how he sees me.
No cocktails or girly shit for you, Miss Cool, he grins.
Beer, probably.
Though you wouldn't mind something stronger from time to time.
He pours a generous glass of scotch, hands it to me, and pivots to the little kitchenette behind him. And you like expensive scotch. Unless you just got this to impress me, in which case, mission failed. I take a sip of my drink, making a point of telling him I hate this kind of flashy behavior. Ty comes back with a tray full of sushi. Colorful, delicious, perfectly rolled sushi, with wasabi and salmon and sweet potato, avocado and black and red roe and asparagus. My mouth falls open. Where did this come from? It looks yummy.
I made it.
No, you didn't.
I don't lie.
He eyes me with pure ferocity. He did this all by himself? I've never known a guy who knows how to cook. In my family, even the females have pretty limited culinary skills, mainly the occasional burnt omelet. But I can't eat anything with fish, I say, being vegetarian at all.
Then stick to this side of the plate.
He motions to the sweet potato and asparagus side, his hand briefly brushing my knuckles and sending a delicate shiver across my skin. He joins me on the rug, getting in my personal space again. I inch away, trying to put some distance between us. He stirs something inside of me every time we're close. I don't need this right now. I just want to fulfill my part of the deal and walk away. No need to freaking snuggle. This is delicious. Do you bake, too? I pop a sushi into my mouth.
Now you're pushing it. No, I don't, and I never really eat sweets. Anyway, I'm cutting weight for my fight in June. Sushi is the guiltiest food I'm allowed to eat.
You need to lose weight? That's insane. You're all muscle. I instantly turn crimson red. Ty grins a busted beam at me and crashes his shoulder into mine.
I have to weigh in before every fight to prove I meet my weight class.
And if you don't make it? I ask.
He shrugs. Then you can't fight. There's a penalty you have to play, blah, blah, but
That rarely happens. Fighters know how to cut weight. If things get desperate, you sweat it out, running laps, wearing plastic bags. That's crazy. It is, and it makes you weak. Plan ahead, and I don't go easy on my competitors who don't. Which reminds me, what's up with you and the blonde guy? He can't possibly mean Charlie Hunnam, right?
You mean Shane? I washed the sushi down my throat with a big gulp of scotch. We're just friends.
And he's good with that, with you. Just being friends. Ty's eyes are probing mine, looking for the truth.
Well, no. Well, yes. I lift a defiant chin. We grew up together. We go to the same university. We hang out, but that's it.
I don't like him, he says simply. Like he has the right to. Like he even knows the guy.
That's okay. I doubt he'll be asking you on a boys' night anytime soon.
His motives aren't pure. He wants you.
Ty takes a small sip from his scotch, throwing a piece of gum into his mouth. I continue munching the sushi. He hasn't touched it, and after our little conversation, I doubt that he will. And you took me out on a date purely for my intellectual abilities, I drawl.
No, I took you on a date because I want to fuck your brains out, among other things. And I know that the feeling is mutual. Unlike your buddy Shane, I don't sugarcoat my intentions. I don't want to be your friend. I have no interest in hanging out with you at the mall, or choosing outfits with you, or crap like that. I crave you. I want all of you. Every single inch of you. And call it an only child syndrome, but I do not fucking share. The scotch glass slips through my fingers. He doesn't even acknowledge my clumsiness. I pick up the glass and dab at the spilled scotch with a napkin from the sushi tray while he just continues to glare. A part of me wants to knock the rest of the bottle of scotch down my throat, then jump on his body and tear every single item of clothing off his unbelievably muscular physique. A different part of me wants to slap him hard for being so rude. A third part of me wants to hug him for making my heart swell inside my chest, telling me what I wanted to hear ever since I laid eyes on him. Bottom line, every single part of me wants to touch Ty Wilder. Bad. You're rude. I'm direct. His eyes wander to my lips, and something shifts in the atmosphere, making the room incredibly hot all of a sudden. I look away quickly. I have to change the subject.
My turn to cross-examine you. So, who is Nicole, and how many Nicoles are there?
I overheard her talking about you the other night at Ned's, and let's just say your female fan base will be thinning out pretty quickly if you keep fucking it up.
Literally.
He looks impressed by my assertiveness, but his jaw tenses. Any chance we can change the subject back to you being a vegetarian?
No chance in hell, I retort.
He sighs.
You're not going to like it.
I take a big gulp. What happened to Mr. Fuck Your Brains Out?
Try me.
He shrugs and runs a hand over his head, and it's your funeral look plastered on his face. There are countless Nicoles. I'm not even sure who the Nicole you're referring to is. It's all just a bunch of sloppy one-night stands. Though, sometimes they stretch into a few weeks of fuck-buddyism. So these women just have sex with you and want nothing more. I snort my condemnation. I shouldn't be judging. Sleeping with a guy without emotional attachment doesn't make you a whore. It can even make you a feminist. Ty gets into my face, gathers my hair into a ponytail, and grazes his 5 o'clock stubble near the sensitive area at the back of my neck. Jealous, Barbie? I snort my amusement. Please. It's just that I heard Nicole saying that you were with 3 girls at once. Is it true? I try not to choke on my words, to look indifferent. Please deny this. Please say it isn't true. Pretty, pretty, please. I mean, really? A foursome? A threesome is a stretch. A foursome is a Bourne ultimatum mission. Ty drops his hands from my face and bites his inner cheek, looking away.
This is not a good first date topic, he says evenly.
I have my answer. I choke back my anger. So what's all this crap? I motion around with my hands.
You're different, he replies.
Bet you never used that one before. My legs push me upward. School assignment or not, this dude just told me in the middle of our first date that he's hooking up with a shitload of girls, sometimes four at a time, and Brain has had enough. It's getting ballsy.
Sit down, Ty orders calmly.
Take me home.
You're mad because I told you I sleep with other girls, he's mumbling to himself, almost as if it's the first time he's met a girl who isn't okay with this.
Wow, you worked that out quickly. Are you sure you want to stay in the XWL and deprive the world of science your incredible brain?
I grab the scotch bottle by its neck and zigzag my way toward the door.
What the hell was I thinking? He is a famous, probably semi-rich, athlete. His whole reputation rests on the premise of his alpha maleness.
I push the door open and stride for the trees. I have no idea where I'm going, but I have to get away. Everywhere he touched me stings like fire, his skin infected with so many past girls who dirtied him up for me. The black night swallows me, and the wooden cabin disappears from my sight. But worry is for calculated, level-headed people. My head's a giant mess right now. I'm expecting him to storm out, to stop me, to explain myself. But with every step I take, I realize that this may not happen and that I'm ultimately screwed. My chucks smack the ground, the decaying leaves, my body and face whacked with branches and mist. Brain shuts down, hormones are gone, and heart is pouting in the corner. Legs are the only ones who seem to work, and I have no freaking clue where they're taking me. I stop dead when the earth curves into a hill, surrounded by nothing but blackness and chirping crickets. My fingers wobble as I tug my cell out of my jacket pocket. The screen lights up before my eyes, but there's no service, seeing as I'm in the middle of nowhere. Worry converts to panic. I turn on the phone's flashlight and explore my surroundings. Knee-high grass, creamy fog, and the unmistakable scent of fear oozing from my pores. I know there's a country road right in front of me, but even drunk, I recognize that staggering onto the dark pavement is not the brightest idea. I take another sip of expensive scotch, squatting down and sitting on the damp grass beside the road. I polish off the rest of the bottle with a few gulps and pluck a blade of grass in frustration. What am I doing? Who goes on a date with a scummy MMA fighter who has STD written all over him? Actually, this is probably one of the few things he hasn't inked on his body yet. I'd like to think I have more respect for myself than to become his flavor of the week, but thinking is not really my strong point right now. I mentally bark at myself. Hormones, you stupid idiots! Brain, you gutless nerd! I balance myself into a standing position. I need to try to find my way back to the cabin, despite the unsteadiness from the liquor. Then I feel a warm, strong hand on my waist. I turn around, surprised, and before I know it, two firm hands grab me by my midriff, swooping me up into a cradle hold. What the hell? I scream, kicking my legs like a toddler. Shut up, Barbie. I'm taking you home. You're a bad first date. I hear Ty's familiar voice and let out a relieved groan. You aren't getting your own bachelor season either, I sniff. Ty laughs as he continues carrying me, striding briskly as if he's carrying a case of beer and not a 125-pound grown human being. I feel his iron-hard chest beneath the soft fabric of his shirt, his flexed biceps rub against my back, his defined six-pack presses against my waist. But most of all, I feel drunk. Live by yourself? I slur.
Yeah. Why?
Your clothes smell too good. Someone else does your laundry, right? I hiccup. He offers me a "you're crazy but cute" smirk. I thrust my face directly into his chiseled face. I love your dimples. Another hiccup. But I'm not going to date you because you're a man whore. What kind of stupid name is Tyler Wilder anyway? It rhymes.
You will date me, he states quietly, walking and looking straight ahead at the road. But right now, you need a bottle of water and an Advil. I recommend you stick to girly cocktails from now on.
Thanks, Dak. Hey, did you read what they wrote about you online?
I nuzzle his neck, brazenly. He smells damn good, and even though I'm not drunk to the point I don't know what I'm doing, I take advantage of my own disastrous condition. Who knows if I'll ever get the chance to be so close to him again?
Someone said she wanted to sit on your face, I announce.
Ty kicks the door to the cabin open and places me carefully on the rug.
Your point? He asks.
Must be fun being you.
Not so much right now.
You can kiss me now if you want.
I close my eyes and relax backwards, resting my head on the arm of the old sofa that sits in front of the fireplace. I let out another hiccup, and this time pepper it with a sneeze. As much as I find you irresistible right now, and trust me, there's nothing sexier than a woman hiccuping her way to a drunken coma, I'm going to pass. Wounded from his rejection, I pretend to fall asleep on the floor. It's late, and I have enough alcohol in my bloodstream to supply a frat party. Besides, anything else I say is bound to count against me. I've already been embarrassed twice by asking him to kiss me and not getting kissed. So I keep my eyes shut when he envelops me in a fleece blanket and picks me up again, as if I'm light as a feather. I keep my eyes shut as he places me in the back seat of his Hummer and drives me back to my apartment. I keep them shut when he lifts me up, opens the door with my keys, flops me down on my bed, removes my chucks, and pulls the comforter all the way up to my chin. I peek for a second when I hear him rummaging through my bathroom drawers, but then I shut them again when he places a bottle of water and ibuprofen on the nightstand beside me and plugs my iPhone into its charger. I keep them shut as he kneels down and places his warm, full lips on the bridge of my nose and kisses it for a few long seconds. And I keep them shut even when I hear the front door bang shut. I keep my eyes shut, but I'm not at all blind to the magic that is Ty Wilder.
Chapter 8. I'll never drink again. My head feels like there's a rave party inside. The DJ is smashed, and everybody is wearing heels. I wipe my eyes wearily and reach for the water bottle, taking a long sip before the pieces of last night's puzzle fall into place. When they do, horror surges through my veins like ropes of pain, chaining me to watch a slow-motion replay of the train wreck that was my last night's behavior. He admitted to having a foursome and to participating in endless one-night stands. I ran like a little idiot because he admitted to fooling around with other women while single. I asked him to kiss me. I hiccuped like a moron. He rejected me. I sneezed in his face. He took me home and ran for his life. I sneezed on his face. Then I remember him taking care of me. The sweet way he tucked me in, the ibuprofen, the kiss. And that makes me feel even worse. I bury my head under my pillow and burrow deeper into my sheets. If only I could disappear beneath my covers and pop back out with someone else's life. Preferably Chenna Duane Tatum's. All would be well. There's no point in crying. I have an early class today, and I promised Nana Marty I'd drop by and congratulate her about the wedding. I have no time for self-pity. Reluctantly, I peel myself from the bed and sit up, holding my head in my hands so it won't explode all over the carpet, but only because that would ruin Izzy's chances of getting her deposit back. I see my cell phone on my nightstand beeping with light and check it. 2 missed calls from Shane, 1 from Mom, 1 text from an unknown number. You owe me that date. I don't recognize the number, but I sure as hell recognize the commanding tone. I want to punch myself in the face for the woozy sensation swelling in my stomach, but I can't help it. He actually took the time and effort to take my number and save his on my phone under the contact Ty Wilder, even after my little drunken scene. I type back too fast and too eagerly for my own good. You owe me that interview. A moment later, I receive his reply.
I said I'd give it to you if we had a date. That wasn't a date. It was an open invitation for rape, at best. Ignoring his criticism, I text, I need your interview. The assistant to the XWL president has already sent me some quotes. You're the only person I have left. Stop being a diva. What are you doing tonight? Just hangin'. I hit send, then add, with my grandma. Sounds wild. I'll pick you up from her place. So you can tell me more about your sexual conquests? No thanks. You asked, and I've already told you. You're different. I'm waiting for Granny's address. Keep waiting, I type, and immediately erase. You can keep asking me on dates. We'll never be a couple. Erasing again and puffing out air aloud, I finally write, don't be late. Oh, Blair, you stupid little girl, Hart reprimands. Why am I going on a second date with this guy? His ego is the last thing I need right now. Then again, I must admit he was nothing but sweet to me. My fingers move on the screen again. Hey, thanks for being a gentleman. I hit the send button before I can change my mind. Don't get used to it. Next time I won't be. Shane and I are basking in the sun on our favorite red bench, drinking coffee. He steals another sideways glance at me, messing with his phone and avoiding looking over at me directly. He wears an I hate being bipolar, it's awesome tee. I know I look like a hungover mess because my hair is wild and my eyes are bloodshot, but he doesn't ask what I was up to last night, and I don't bring the subject up either. Who are you texting? I eye him suspiciously, taking a long sip from my double shot espresso. No one. Hey, bullshit, I'm Blair. Nice to meet you. I smirk at him. He looks embarrassed, pulling his hoodie all the way down his nose so I can't see his face. Shane Panty Creamer Kinney, tell me who you're texting right freaking now. My smile widens. Maybe he's got a new dip. Maybe it's serious. Maybe I'm out of the doghouse. He looks around. I'm not texting anyone. I'm looking into reporting a crime. Someone slashed my tires and keyed my Mustang, and they did a hella good job. Shit! I jump up from the bench to face him. You should definitely file a report. Show me what they did. Slashed tires, remember? He declares gravely. I had to take the bus. His voice hints at something more serious, like, I have stage 4 cancer, or World War 3 is coming. You still live to tell the tale. I pat his arm. Instead of throwing a pity party, you can just go to the police. I think it's the MMA guy. Which one? Wilder, he says, touching his cheeks absentmindedly as if he's contemplating this. I think I saw his Hummer after my car alarm went off. I'm tempted to say this could be any Hummer, but Ty's car is pretty unique with the skulls, flames, and all the other atrocities. Why would Ty do that to you? Shane shakes his head. No clue. I know he has some beef with my roomie, Josh, but that was a long time ago. Maybe he thought my Mustang was his? I put my hands on his shoulders and look into his eyes. Hey, buddy, trust me, it's probably just some punk kids. Where you live in Oakland, you should be thankful it's just your tires they butchered. I'll give you a ride back home today. This rewards me with a tight smile. It's not much, but I'll take it. I hate seeing Shane so down. It's unlike him. Oh, and good news. Izzy said she'd be thrilled to help you out. I bend the truth, just a tad, babbling on. She asked exactly what you need and promised she'll get you everything you ask for. Really? He eyes me suspiciously, his nose wrinkling to disguise his gut-punched reaction. I go out of my way to look enthusiastic, but I'm not exactly known for my convincing poker face. Yeah, whatever you need. Let me know and she'll pass it through me. Shane offers me a knowing smile and we make our way back to the university building. Of course you will. By the way, you never answered my text message? What text message? Oh, shit. I hurriedly tug my phone out of my pocket and scroll to my incoming messages. For some weird reason, the text under Shane's name looks like I've already opened it. It says, "Don't make me hurt you, B. You'll regret the day." I remember the last text I sent him. It was a futile threat saying I'd stage an intervention for him and Izzy, forcing them back in the same room to work out their issues. Comprehension strikes me like a bolt of lightning. Did Ty see the text while I was snoring my way to Drunksville? He may have even interpreted this as some kind of threat. But why slash Shane's tires? The only thing Ty seems interested in is his job. And now me. Why me? A teeny tiny part of me now wants to find out. I make a stop at the apartment to freshen up, or to put it bluntly, attempt a makeover that transforms me from something that looks like it didn't crawl out of a sewer in a sci-fi film. Calling a truce in this war between brain and hormones, I've decided not to jump to any conclusions regarding Shane's vandalized car until I have the chance to run it by Ty. I change my clothes and spray on enough perfume to stun a herd of buffaloes. After which, I try 3 different lipsticks and apply my signature thick eyeliner. I shove a pack of mint gum into my jeans pocket and head out. First stop, visiting Nana Marty. Final destination, date redemption with Ty Wilder. For the interview, of course. Just for the interview. Nana Marty lives in a high-end senior home in Oakland. It looks like a glitzy hotel, inside and out. Martha Rosenblum isn't just a badass, she's purely lethal. She arrived in this country not long after World War II, straight to Ellis Island, and told the officer her name was Miriam. He changed it to Martha and gave her candy. That's why she always told Izzy and me to always take candy from strangers. It's yummy and sweet. Just make sure your parents are around when you do. Nana Marty has a reputation for not giving a fuck about what people think. At 18, she headed west from her New York home and landed in San Francisco, where she bagged herself a job at Fisherman's Wharf selling spices and herbs. She knew every single sailor that passed her store, in more than one way, if you ask me, and refused to settle down with any of them. Her behavior was unheard of. A single young woman working and paying her way to independence. But she didn't want to get married. Until she met Grandpa Graham, that is. Graham wasn't Jewish, or a sailor. Actually, he was well off, coming from a family of liquor importers. Marty and Graham fell in love, but his parents weren't happy about her being uneducated, poor as hell, and Jewish. Graham went ahead and married her anyway. Graham got pregnant with twins, my mother and her brother Graham Jr., soon after. She continued working until the last day of her pregnancy, and when the twins turned 3, she and Graham managed to buy her store together. Graham died 7 years later of a heart attack. Marty arranged the most beautiful funeral, held her chin up when she met his family, and got back to work the following day. She never asked for a penny from them or from anyone else. Over the years, she had boyfriends here and there, but no one could fill a dead man's shoes. Especially when that dead man gave up his good life and fortune to be with you. Marty never forgot this. Nana Marty always tells me I'm a lot like her. Independent, stubborn, and fundamentally batshit crazy. Izzy, on the other hand, is Graham, through and through, a happy-go-lucky, well-mannered person. I always like visiting Nana, and today I'm especially eager to hear all the gossip. I take my train to Oakland, knowing that Ty is going to pick me up when I'm done. I bring a banana bread with me, freshly baked from the Sweetest Affair. I walk into the senior housing complex and glance around, struggling to believe Simon is among the sleepy crowd. I pass through the sage green hallways until I reach her door and knock twice, trying to ignore the stale scent of mothballs, microwaved food, and baby powder. Old people's scent. Gran opens the door wearing a pair of leather pants, matching black boots, and a leopard top. Bleached hair, red lips. This woman is more of a pinup girl than most of my 20-something classmates. Hello, rascal. Oh, look at you all dressed up and ready to impress. Who's the lucky boy? Nana Marty sure knows the drill. She grabs me by my collar and pulls me into her apartment. Nana has a stylish condo with floor-to-ceiling windows and abstract paintings hung throughout. The more it looks like someone threw up on the canvas, the more likely she'll hang it on her wall. She pours us warm cider and munches on the banana bread straight from the tinfoil. Signaling me to sit down with her red manicured fingernail, she clip-clops back and forth while opening a bottle of red wine to spike the cider.
Is Simon here? I'd hate to barge in on something. I bite back a smirk and take a sip of my alcoholic cider. It doesn't escape me that earlier today I promised to never drink again. But it's a whole different ballgame now that I need to engage in yet another date with Tyler. He's at his place. We need our space or we go mad. You know your old gran. I do, actually, since I'm much the same. I don't do needy, barely handle relationships, and even though I gave up my V-card when I was 17 to my first serious boyfriend, it was mostly to get it out of the way and move on with my life as an adult. So getting married, huh? I ask. She slides a piece of banana bread onto a small plate for me, chuckling to herself. What can I say? He's too sexy to say no to. Gross, Nana. Trust me, it's good news that your libido doesn't die before you do. She pats my forearm with her spotted, blue-veined hand before sharing the story of her and Simon. Simon arrived at the complex about a month ago. Reluctant would be an understatement to describe how he felt about changing his zip code. His sons forced him into moving here after he set his house on fire for the third time in 2 years while he hosted a romantic night with one of his lovers. Yep, one of his lovers. No longer willing to put up with his antics, his three sons pulled their widowed father by the ear and threw him into a retirement home. Considering Simon spent his days on gambling, fine dining, and working out, he soon found that he was bored out of his mind with the activities his senior building had to offer. First, he tried his luck playing cards with all the oldies, spiking their tea with whiskey for when they weren't looking and cheating his way into winning, until he convinced them to play for money. Management found out and banned him from playing, so he switched to working out. Next, he got caught trying to bench press the weight of an elephant, so management revoked his gym privileges too. The incidents just kept piling up like firewood. Everything Simon did made someone cringe until one day, his neighbor Ruth saw him in the hallway and offered him some advice. You should really meet Marty. You two will either burn the place down or move in together and leave us in peace. Figuring he'd already done enough burning for one lifetime, Simon opted for option number two. He knocked on my grandmother's door the very same day. He brought peanuts, beer, and classic movies. When she opened the door and wordlessly ushered him in, he knew that she knew, too, that this was fate. Soon, they started spending every other day together, playing cards for cash and working out military style. When every other day became every single day, Simon went down on one knee and said, Marty, I have no idea how much longer we'll live, but as long as we're still kicking, I want to make an honest woman out of you. Let's get married, move out of this shithole, and show the world what we're made of. Nana Marty said yes. A tear rolls down my cheek when she finishes her story. Holy Moses, Blair, stop being such a wuss. She knocks down the rest of her spiked drink in one long gulp. I'm not crying because of the ending, I sniff. I'm just a tad emotional. And what's stirring my emotions is the fact that I really am like my grandmother. I, too, take a shine to bad boys, apparently. The only difference is I'm pretty sure my story won't have a happily ever after. I fight the impulse to wipe my snot with my sleeve. Nana awards me with the widest smile she can anatomically pull. Here, bat your eyes before your eyeliner ends up in your mouth. She hands me a tissue. Now, tell me all about him. It's funny how I'm able to tell my gran what I can't imagine uttering in front of my own mother. My mother is the most motherly, don't leave home without a sweater type of person. Mom would judge, then worry, then try and convince me to open up an account and J-date. But still, I tense when I tell Nana that I went on a date with a guy who cage fights for a living and thinks painting your car doors with flames and skulls is acceptable, even if you're not 16 anymore. And that, despite our disastrous first date, we're meeting again tonight. But I don't want to date him. Only, sometimes I kind of do. I think you like him. Nana Marty leans forward, jabbing my ribcage with her manicured fingernail in accusation. I nibble on my fingernails. Maybe I do.
Then go get him.
Oh, no, I can't. Not now. I have this assignment multitask. You're a woman. We're good at that. And he has this tomcat reputation. He's single now, isn't he?
and he made it clear he's interested in you. But no buts. Your mother and father will warm up to the idea eventually. Their other daughter is splashed on magazine covers wearing nothing but a thong and two seashells to cover her modesty. Nana chuckles. They'll get used to your guy, too. Besides, you've always been the little rebel. You must feed the reputation. Like me.
She wiggles her eyebrows. God bless Nana. She really knows how to organize all the shelves in my messy head. My phone vibrates in my pocket just as I begin to calm down. It's a text from Ty. I'm outside. Want me to come up and charm your old granny's elastic panties off, or are you coming down? I smile and show Nana Marty his message. She toots,
Old granny, huh? I'll eat your boy alive and strangle him with my Elizabeth Passion undies if he dares to come up here.
A devilish spark makes me type her threat and press send. I watch as my cell screen darkens, and after 2 minutes of no reply, turn toward my gran.
Maybe I pushed it a little too far. This is only our second date, too soon to meet my grandmother. If he's as tough as he claims, the last thing he's afraid of is an 82-year-old with a weak pelvic floor.
A firm rap on the door sends both our heads turning in the direction of the entrance.
Oh my God.
Open up, Marty Rosenblum.
Ty's tone is amused, and I can't help but feel like someone is tickling the inside of my stomach with 1,000 tiny feathers. Gran slides from her chair, her eyebrows arching in surprise, and opens the door with a smile.
Exactly what I've ordered.
Her smile widens when she takes in the guy standing on her doorstep. She reaches for a handshake, but Ty takes her hand and kisses the back of it with a grin, not breaking their eye contact. He enters the apartment at complete ease, like they've known each other for centuries. He's wearing tight skinny jeans paired with a black t-shirt, his tattoos on full, unapologetic display. He looks the handsomest I've seen him yet. Something about this style makes him painfully irresistible.
What are you guys drinking?
He inhales the fruity aroma, leaning toward me and pressing his lips to my ear.
Barbie, he whispers into it.
I melt into my chair. Wait, am I seriously getting used to this stupid nickname?
Sweet alcoholic cider. Care for some?
Nana Marty dangles the nearly empty bottle in front of him.
No thanks, he declines politely. Water would be great. Need any help, ma'am?
Nana elbows me, doing a once-over of his body.
Chivalry and tattoos. He's a keeper. Seriously, Tyler, what can I get you?
Water, he repeats. I'm on a diet.
Nana sends me a shocked look. I shrug helplessly. True story. She turns back to him.
But you mustn't lose any weight. Your body's perfect.
Your butt is the cutest I've seen in 20 years, and boy, I've seen some cute butts in my lifetime.
I redden and try not to look completely horrified. What the hell was I thinking? My grandmother is the queen of TMI. This conversation could easily devolve into my obsession with wearing my diapers on top of my head when I was a baby. This is bad. Actually, forgetting your oven is still turned on is bad. Letting your date meet your crazy grandmother is disastrous.
I wanted to embarrass Ty and have him twist uncomfortably until he begged me to come downstairs. Instead, Ty rushed up to her apartment and now they speak freely about everything.
And I mean everything.
Your ears look awful. Is that because of all the fighting? It looks like they collapsed inwards.
Very unattractive. Nana Marty wrinkles her nose.
Yeah, it's a souvenir from my very first XWL win. Vicious headlock, but I managed. The fighter ears definitely bring down my stock. It's a bitch, for sure. I constantly have to drain fluid from them with a syringe.
This disgusting, Tyler.
This from my Nana, who has a green, double-headed dildo on her nightstand. My mom still thinks it's a decorative cactus.
It's not for the faint-hearted, but neither is the XWL, he says.
So when are you fighting the guy?
June 13th in Vegas. Should be an interesting weekend.
Nana offers me a meaningful look.
Yes, it will, sweetheart. That's the weekend when I'm getting married to my fiancé, Simon, in Sausalito.
Right, the wedding. She rushes to a sideboard and comes back with a crisp, creamy envelope. Blair, I need you to give this invitation to the Kinneys. Sure thing. I'll do it this week.
Great. Now, please just don't mention Shane's name. Please don't. Please don't. Please don't.
And make sure to drag Shane with you to the wedding. Your mother said she walked in on you two the other day. I didn't know you were still in touch. I've missed that boy.
She shakes her head, her smile nostalgic from all the times she saw us playing in my parents' yard and watching cartoons together as kids. I turn my head towards Ty. Flared nostrils, clenched jaw, hands balled into fists, a vein throbbing in his neck. Not happy. On a scale of 1 to in need of therapy, how fucked up is it that it's kind of turning me on that he's so worried about Shane?
Hey, Ty. Let's wrap this up.
I get up from my seat and tug on his sleeve, feeling the blood humming in my veins as I touch his hand.
This was nice.
Ty offers his devilish smile, but the flash of anger in his eyes begs to differ. I'm worried that he'll screw with my interview with him again.
Tyler, come on.
I tug at his sleeve again, like a 4-year-old.
I don't know why you're so hell-bent on going so soon, Nana says. You can't eat or drink alcohol, so your date is going to be challenging, to say the least.
She turns to Ty. No offense.
None taken.
He flashes his dimples. I can see where Blair got her sass.
It wasn't from her mother, that's for sure.
I'm now standing in the doorway, huffing. Ty, I'm not joking. Can't overhear. I can't take them together anymore. They make me feel like the responsible adult in the room.
Me!
Ty finally drags himself to my spot and opens the door for me. His face is still fixed on my grandmother, and she awards him the same attention. These two are a dangerous combo.
Have fun, you two, and don't forget to practice safe sex,
she calls over her shoulder, click-clacking her heels toward the kitchen.
God, no filters with this one.
Nana!
I roar as I push Ty out the door. I feel the unwanted pull when I touch him.
What? I don't want my granddaughter catching STDs. No offense again, Tyler.
None taken, Marty.
But this time he flinches. Or maybe it's a tick.
Probably just a tick.
When we enter the elevator, I press the down button 5 times in a row and rest my head on the silver wall, wheezing like a woman who just escaped from a starving grizzly. Ty stands to the far side of the elevator, his Adam's apple bobbing up and down as he tries to keep his temper in check. The warmth of my humiliation melds with the burning sensation of my lust for him. I need to keep reminding myself this is just for an interview. He has no right to be mad at me. I owe him nothing.
So is Shane going to be your wedding date?
He asks casually, stuffing his hands in his pockets and staring at his biker boots. That's my chance. That's my getaway ride.
Seems so, yeah.
I blink twice and look the other way.
That's it, Ty. Give it up.
Give me up and let me move on with my miserable, action-free love life. The elevator is slow, and the silence between us pains me. I regret those last few words as soon as they left my mouth. Tomcat or no, he is single, and I shouldn't want to hurt him like I do. My mouth falls open, and I'm about to speak when the elevator pings and he walks out before I get the chance to say anything. What the hell is going on with Hart? It's hurting. Chapter 9. I'm sorry, I whisper when we arrive where he parked. He's just about to climb into his Hummer. It's barely audible, but he must have heard. I watch his back when he turns around. I'm standing in the middle of the busy Oakland sidewalk, fiddling with my fingers, palm sweating, looking down at my chucks. Pulled a dick move, time to open up to it. Shane's not my wedding date, and we don't go on dates, period. We're friends. I didn't lie to you yesterday, and I'm not lying to you today. It's just that... I take a deep breath and close my eyes. Opening up to a stranger seems like an insane idea, but opening up to this hunky stranger, guy who makes me feel so dazed, so hot, so bothered in front of dozens of random bystanders, makes me feel downright nauseous. And still, his feelings matter, somehow. It's just that you kinda intimidate me. I'm sure you're a great guy. I just don't want to date you.
The few sexual encounters I've had were nothing to write home about. Sex was a way to be intimate with the two serious boyfriends I've had, not a tool for physical pleasure. They kneaded my breasts like it was cookie dough and drilled into me with the determination and grace of a drunken college kid jumping into a street fight. I filed sex in my head as something rather underwhelming. Even if I could open up to the idea of dating a guy like Ty, I would embarrass myself to no end the minute we stepped into the bedroom. He has the experience, the reputation, and most probably really high expectations. I have nothing to offer him in this department. He takes a step toward me, tilting my chin up with his finger and thumb. The hustle and bustle of the sidewalk blurs around me. The smell of food, body odor, and pollution no longer wafts through my nostrils. His eyes shine with intensity. I want to break free from his gaze, but he's forcing me to stare at him, chaining me to this moment. "You don't want to date me," he repeats evenly. No question mark. I give him a quick nod, but my stomach is clenched, my body tight with anticipation. He takes another lazy step forward, his face unreadable. "I'm going to kiss you now. If you don't want me to, turn away. Offer me your cheek. I won't be mad." There's a beat before he continues. "And you'll still get your interview." My heart is crashing against my sternum when his forehead dips into mine. I'm swimming in a warm pool of honey. "Turn away," I tell myself. "Don't do this. He's offered you an exit route. Move your feet and run." But I don't. I close my eyes, my breath hitches, and I wait. And wait. Then wait some more, my skin itching for his touch. He's always chewing gum, and the minute I smell it, the minty sweet twist, I part my lips and let out a soft moan. His lips find mine, brushing my mouth, leaving warm tingles wherever they touch. He's testing the waters. No tongue, no rage, just pure, surprising gentleness. My toes curl when I feel him grasping my waist to bring me closer, body to body. He feels so firm and tight against my small frame. The only thing separating us are a few pieces of clothing and my goddamn stubbornness. A stranger's shoulder bumps into mine by accident, and Ty is quick to shield me from the rest of the throng with his back, cornering me against a storefront, making sure that I'm safe. His hand is in my hair, and his body is pressed against mine when he finally parts his lips, and not a moment too soon. His tongue explores my mouth eagerly, and I can't help but grin into his lips. He grins back, still kissing, so I allow myself to wrap my arms around his neck, my fingers trailing over his tattoo softly. I know that, logically, we are not physically compatible. He is huge, and I'm pretty small, but based on kissing him alone, it feels like we were created especially for one another. We kiss for 10 minutes, maybe a little more, but when we break away and I lift my eyes to his, my cheeks flushed, my heart stops completely. The twinkle in his eyes is priceless, different, almost freaking vulnerable. I want to remember this. The surprise in his eyes, the tenderness of his touch, the sparks flying between us when I finally found out what he probably knew long ago, that I wanted him. Wanted this. I touch my cheek self-consciously, so Ty lifts his hand to stroke my knuckles, his tone all business.
"Suffice to say, you do want to date me."
I laugh into his chest, no longer afraid of his touch. I kissed him and survived. I kissed him and it was delicious. I kissed him and found out that despite his reputation and the fears I failed to keep at bay, he was just a boy kissing a girl, hoping she'd like it, and him, after all. I stare at his face, not sure whose turn it is to speak. This is the first time I'm seriously toying with the idea of considering this as an actual date. True, he is too hot to be mine. Hell, he's too hot to be anyone's. But weirder things have happened. I could probably name a few of them once I step out of the lusty mist I'm intoxicated with. So, Shane? He leaves the question floating. This time, I don't hesitate. Shane's a friend. Honest to God, nothing less, but nothing more, either. Ty's eyes cling into mine, desperately seeking the truth. Good. He nods once and swivels, leading the way back to the Hummer. Now get into my car before I do something that'll get us both arrested. Recipe for a successful second date with a hot MMA fighter you're equally scared of and lust after. Ingredients. One girl who blocks away thoughts about other girls, particularly ones named Nicole. One guy who blocks away suspicions about hunky hetero BFFs, particularly ones named Shane. One cozy Mexican restaurant. A problematic trio. Brain, hormones, and heart, who are surprisingly well-behaved and in harmony, for a change. The Mexican restaurant is on the outskirts of Concord, and we sit in a far corner on a padded red bench, eating, laughing, and teasing each other playfully. Ty sticks to water, salad, and chewing gum. Don't worry, he laughs, when I guilt